From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Davos by the Hudson, where the World Economic Forum is meeting in Manhattan.
From the halls of the World Economic Forum to the streets of New York and Munich to the Social Forum at Porto Alegre in Brazil, is another world possible?
I'm Amy Goodman with Anuruddha Das for a Democracy Now! Special. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. The Justice Department has directed the White House staff to preserve records of contacts between government officials and Enron executives over the last 3 years. The request comes in the wake of revelations that both Enron and its auditing firm, Arthur Andersen, destroyed vital documents related to the company's collapse. It's the first sign that federal prosecutors have extended their criminal investigation to the White House. Administration officials vowed to comply with the request but played down its political implications, pointedly noting it covered a period that started before President Bush came to Washington. Still, the request foreshadows the likelihood that some of the documents will be sought by criminal investigators and, as such, could pose a political problem for the administration. The administration has so far refused to turn over government. Also emerged yesterday that the former head of Enron, Ken Lay, gave the White House a list of his personal recommendations for key federal energy posts. Two of the people on his list were appointed, providing the strongest evidence so far of the political influence wielded by President Bush's biggest financial backer. A White House spokesperson said this week that Lay gave the list of names to Clay Johnson, Bush's personnel director. Among the eight or so names were Pat Wood, now chair of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and Nora Brownell, a member of the commission. Argentina was thrown into fresh chaos yesterday when its Supreme Court declared emergency financial controls imposed by the government to be unconstitutional. The decision significantly raises the prospect that the country's banks will collapse. The central bank said it was declaring Monday and Tuesday bank holidays to stop Argentines from withdrawing their deposits en masse and toppling the largely foreign-owned banking system. Many of these banks are now considering pulling out of the country entirely. The unexpected Supreme Court ruling threw the government into disarray yesterday, causing it to postpone announcing a new economic plan. It also prompted Argentina's economy minister to cancel his planned visit to the World Economic Forum today. In the first official reaction to Bush's State of the Union address, the North Korean government has condemned the speech, saying it's little short of declaring a war. It said, however, it was powerfully equipped to handle any conflict. In his address, Bush labeled North Korea, Iran, and Iraq an axis of evil and said North Korea was building weapons of mass destruction while letting its people starve. Israeli helicopters carried out a missile strike against a Palestinian naval base in the Gaza Strip before dawn today, calling it retaliation for mortars and gunfire directed at a Jewish settlement. Meanwhile, thousands of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank rallied in support of Yasser Arafat, who's been held under virtual house arrest in the West Bank town of Ramallah for the past 2 months. And we go now live to Munich, Germany, where thousands have been protesting a NATO meeting. Free Speech Radio News Patrick Beckett is standing by. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thanks a lot, Amy.
Can you explain what the protests are about?
Well, this weekend in Munich, we have a meeting of the security. It's called the Munich Security Conference, and there's more than 200 government ministers and military personnel, as well as representatives of industry, the military industry leaders, and they come together in Munich along with all the representatives of the NATO countries, the NATO foreign ministers, to discuss security issues throughout the world. And this weekend, there's thousands of people here to demonstrate against NATO's policy, people who are criticizing this meeting as warmongering and not a defense discussion so much as as planning future incursions, as well as discussing NATO expansion. And furthermore, like, the demonstrations have been banned by the Munich city authorities.
Patrick Beckett speaking to us from Munich, Germany, where protests have been banned by the city of Munich. We'll have more on that story later in this two-hour special. Is Another World Possible?
Independent Media Center, New York City, and we're here at the Waldorf Astoria, site of the 2002 annual meeting of the World Economic Forum. We're going to talk to some people and see what they think. Have you heard of the World Economic Forum at all?
No.
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
No, I have not.
No.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly.
From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Davos by the Hudson, where the World Economic Forum is meeting in Manhattan.
From the halls of the World Economic Forum to the streets of New York and Munich to the social forum at Porto Alegre in Brazil, is another world possible?
I'm Amy Goodman with Anuruddha Das for a Democracy Now! Special. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. The Justice Department has directed the White House staff to preserve records of contacts between government officials and Enron executives over the last 3 years. The request comes in the wake of revelations that both Enron and its auditing firm, Arthur Andersen, destroyed vital documents related to the company's collapse. It's the first sign that federal prosecutors have extended their criminal investigation to the White House. Administration officials vowed to comply with the request but played down its political implications, pointedly noting it covered a period that started before President Bush came to Washington. Still, the request foreshadows the likelihood that some of the documents will be sought by criminal investigators and, as such, could pose a political problem for the administration. The administration has so far refused to turn over government records to Congress. Meanwhile, it also emerged yesterday that the former head of Enron, Ken Lay, gave the White House a list of his personal recommendations for key federal energy posts. Two of the people on his list were appointed, providing the strongest evidence so far of the political influence wielded by President Bush's biggest financial backer. A White House spokesperson said this week that Lay gave the list of names to Clay Johnson, Bush's personnel director. Among the eight or so names were Pat Wood, now chair of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and Nora Brownell, a member of the commission. Argentina was thrown into fresh chaos yesterday when its Supreme Court declared emergency financial controls imposed by the government to be unconstitutional. The decision significantly raises the prospect that the country's banks will collapse. The central bank said it was declaring Monday and Tuesday bank holidays to stop Argentines from withdrawing their deposits en masse and toppling the largely foreign-owned banking system. Many of these banks are now considering pulling out of the country entirely. The unexpected Supreme Court ruling threw the government into disarray yesterday, causing it to postpone announcing a new economic plan. It also prompted Argentina's economy minister to cancel his planned visit to the World Economic Forum today. In the first official reaction to Bush's State of the Union address, the North Korean government has condemned the speech, saying it's little short of declaring a war. It said, however, it was powerfully equipped to handle any conflict. In his address, Bush labeled North Korea, Iran, and Iraq an axis of evil and said North Korea was building weapons of mass destruction while letting its people starve. Israeli helicopters carried out a missile strike against a Palestinian naval base in the Gaza Strip before dawn today, calling it retaliation for mortars and gunfire directed at a Jewish settlement. Meanwhile, thousands of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank rallied in support of Yasser Arafat, who's been held under virtual house arrest in the West Bank town of Ramallah for the past 2 months. And we go now live to Munich, Germany, where thousands have been protesting a NATO meeting. Free Speech Radio News' Patrick Beckett is standing by. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thanks a lot, Amy.
Can you explain what the protests are about?
Well, this weekend in Munich, we have a meeting of the security. It's called the Munich Security Conference, and there's more than 200 government ministers and military personnel, as well as representatives of industry, the military industry leaders, and they come together in Munich along with all the representatives of the NATO countries, the NATO foreign ministers, to discuss security issues throughout the world. And this weekend, there's thousands of people here to demonstrate against NATO's policy, people who are criticizing this meeting as warmongering and not a defense discussion so much as planning future incursions, as well as discussing NATO expansion. And furthermore, like, the demonstrations have been banned by the Munich city authorities.
Patrick Beckett speaking to us from Munich, Germany, where protests have been banned by the city of Munich. We'll have more on that story later in this two-hour special. Is Another World Possible?
Independent Media Center, New York City, and we're here at the Waldorf Astoria, site of the 2002 annual meeting of the World Economic Forum. We're going to talk to some people and see what they think. Have you heard of the World Economic Forum at all?
No.
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
No, I have not.
No.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
It's the 1,000 most powerful corporations in the world and their favorite politicians.
Yes, I have.
Six major multinational corporations that own 90% of the world's media.
CNN, ESPN, ABC, BCB, TNT, but mostly BS.
Are also part of the World Economic Forum. Maybe that's why no one's heard of it. 1,000 people deciding the economic fate of the world. What about the 7 billion of the rest of us? That's why no one's heard of it. 1,000 people deciding the economic fate of the world. What about the 7 billion of the rest of us?
That produced by the Independent Media Center here in New York. You are listening to Democracy Now! Is Another World Possible? I'm Amy Goodman, and my co-host is Aniruddha Das, who is the host of Asia Pacific Forum at Pacifica Station WBAI. Welcome, Aniruddha.
Thank you very much, Amy, and it is wonderful to be here. And it's particularly wonderful under these changed circumstances in our mother organization, Pacifica. The last time I was here was shortly after September 11th, when our show, Asia Pacific Forum, the only progressive Asian program in the entire New York area, was thrown off air just around the time that the bombing in Afghanistan was being planned by the then management at Pacifica. But now we are Pacifica, and it is all because of grassroots power and organizing.
And grassroots power and organizing is certainly what we're going to be talking about over this next 2 hours, where we bring you reports from the streets of the World Economic Forum in New York. It's great to have you here, Anuruddha, bringing your perspective, especially around stories like Enron, not only a microcosm of what is being protested in New York today, but certainly affecting countries all over the world, particularly India. And we are going down to Porto Alegre, where producers Chris Abrams and Deepa Fernandez are standing by, bringing us reports live from the streets there. But we're going to begin where the media, well, seems never to begin, and that is talking about the content of what the protests are all about. First, the issue was, will there be violence? Now that there has not been a police riot, they are turning to protesters in the streets who are saying, well, we're happy, we're penned in here, and the police are over there, and then going to another place and someone saying free speech is important. This is what I watched all morning. I don't think I saw one explanation of what the World Economic Forum was and what the protests are about.
And what the substance is. There is really no critique. It just seems like now that the violence is not there, it is simply a love fest, and there is no analysis of what the World Economic Forum brings to us and the issues that the people on the streets are there to challenge.
Well, before we go to our first guest, Mike Dolan of Public Citizen, that has just put out an expose on the World Economic Forum, we're going to go to the streets right by Columbus Circle, the World Economic Forum meeting at the Waldorf Astoria, the site of the grand annual retreat of the world's movers and shakers, is a maze of police barriers, concrete barricades, flashing lights, blue uniforms, bomb-sniffing dogs. Only authorized vehicles and residents are allowed past checkpoints set up blocks surrounding the hotel. Every year, the World Economic Forum brings together, this year, almost 3,000 business and political leaders, from celebrity CEOs like Bill Gates and Steve Forbes to Russian oligarchs, kings, senators, and patriarchs. An invitation to the conference is basically a membership card in a global economic and political elite. The WEF once boasted its participants represent no less than 3/4 of the world's wealth. 1,000 of the foremost companies from around the world pay about $25,000 each in annual dues, $6,000 for each participant who attends the meeting. John Hamilton is in the streets with us. John, can you tell us where you are? The protests are gearing up right now, and what's happening?
Well, right now I'm at the corner of Central Park South and Columbus Circle. Earlier this morning, about 1,000 people rallied along Park Avenue near the meeting of the World Economic Forum at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Hundreds of police, including many in riot gear and others who were mounted police, surrounded metal barricades set up along the west end of the avenue. Between 56th and 50th Streets, people packed into protest pens like sardines, and anyone wishing to exit these pens had to ask permission from police. We saw at least one demonstrator arrested. He was charged with a 19th century New York City ordinance against wearing masks in public places. Around 10 a.m., protesters began assembling at the southeast and southwest corners of Central Park here. At Columbus Circle, where I am now, more than 1,000 have gathered. In fact, it looks like more than that now. They've gathered under the banner of Reclaim the Streets. I've heard reports that 5 have been arrested here, and I can confirm that at least 2 were taken away by police from the sidewalk along Central Park South. Police wouldn't say what these folks were arrested for and what they would be charged with. We're expecting this large group of people to march sometime before 1 o'clock today. In fact, it looks like they're preparing to move out now. And when they do, they'll be met by literally thousands of NYPD officers who are out in force today.
John Hamilton, thanks for being with us. We will certainly touch base with you again as these hours proceed. And as these hours proceed, there are teach-ins and protests all over the world. We also hope to head to Los Angeles. It's wonderful to be broadcasting on Pacifica Station KPFK as well today. I know there is an all-day teach-in starting at 10 in the morning California time at Fairfax High School with people like Michael Parenti and Sonali Kohatkar and others. And we do hope to be speaking with them as well as going down to Porto Alegre and going around the world. But we're going to start right here in our Firehouse studio, just blocks from where the towers of the World Trade Center once stood. Davos World Economic Forum, Pricey Corporate Trade Association Loses Its Camouflage, is the name of a new report by Public Citizen. And we're going to start by looking at just what the World Economic Forum is with Mike Dolan, who's the deputy director of Public Citizen. Ani?
Mike, could you start by describing the structure of the World Economic Forum? What is it that we need to be aware of?
First of all, let me say thanks to both of you for having me on the air, and it's really great to be with you, and I want to echo your sentiments from a minute ago and commend both of you for the long struggle with respect to the larger networks, and congratulations, and I think it's been wonderful. I'd like to say hi to all my friends at the KPFK event as well. I need to go join John in the streets here in a few minutes to protest the World Economic Forum, and I should tell you why. To answer your question, the World Economic Forum is a global chamber of commerce. It's an international business, transnational corporate trade association pretending to be a think tank and a global do-gooder. It's sort of like the International Chamber of Commerce. In fact, many of the members of the Chamber of Commerce are also World Economic Forum members. But it's got like a publicist and an event planner. And the event planner has produced this thing up at the Waldorf Astoria. It has a membership. It has two boards that govern its structure, these events, the regional meetings, as well as these annual events, as you say, Amy, usually in Davos, this week in Midtown Manhattan. And they pay about $250,000 each annually. Okay, so more than what most of the rest of the corporations, whose membership is determined by, among other things, their assets. So they have to have $1 billion in gross revenues to be a member of the 1,000 corporations. To be a member of the World Economic Forum, you have to be one of the transnational elites. Now, we wouldn't care too much about all this corporate hobnobbing, Public Citizen and all our allies here in New York and down in Brazil and around the world, if the agenda of this thing was just, you know, good meals and long speeches and celebrity entertainment. But what they're up to, these corporate chieftains and their political guests, 18 presidents and 9 prime ministers uptown right now, is probably bad for the rest of us. And as an example, I'll offer the World Trade Organization. As you may know, the WTO was essentially conceived at a World Economic Forum meeting back in 1981-82. And you'll recall that 27 months ago, Amy, we were in Seattle to confront the WTO. This is obviously another mobilization against corporate globalization today. But it's because of that kind of decision-making and the backroom deals where civil society, the constituencies that you mentioned, are not represented. And that's what we're out there to protest, and I'm going to go join John in a minute.
Right. Now, you bring up an extremely important point that there is, at one level, the WEF is like this club of old boys, and boys is very correctly stated.
Yes, that's right.
Primarily, what is the percentages?
It's 98%. There's only one woman on the board, and she joined last year.
And old white boys, if I may say so.
Well, you see, that's the thing, is that this organization purports to be a global sort of think tank, when in fact, the actual demographics, I mean, if you actually look at who belongs and who the participants are this year, 40% of the delegates coming this year are from Europe. Europe, of course, represents 12% of the global population. 36% from North America, mostly from the United States. What are we globally? 5.1%. Down in Porto Alegre, at the World Social Forum, a very different complexion, literally, to the World Economic Forum.
Right, but not only is it this bunch of old boys who, like old boys in any club, would make their deals over cocktails and over their games or going to these various soirees, but in the regional conferences, they have actually launched policy-making bodies. You talked about the WTO. In fact, in 1999, 2000, in their annual report, they claimed their major victory to be the launching of the WTO.
That's right. They're very proud of having been the venue where that controversial organization was founded.
Right. In the India summit in 1998, in these regional summits, you had groups coming in specifically to force the Indian government to get rid of its internal legislation.
That's exactly right. It was at a regional meeting, and it's where it's these regional meetings, not this big event this year in Manhattan and usually over in Davos, Switzerland, at the regional Mercosur meeting just last year, to give it an example from this hemisphere in South America. One of the big topics was the expansion of NAFTA throughout the hemisphere under the rubric of the Free Trade Area of the Americas. And some of the panels and discussions and work groups address important corporate questions like how to deal with FTAA protests and how do we make the implementation date of 2005 for that flawed, failed model.
Can you tell us who Kurt Schwab is?
Kurt Schwab is the founder of the World Economic Forum. 1971, he put this thing together basically as a training seminar in management techniques for European and U.S., you know, transnational corporate executives. And over the last 30 years, he's grown this thing in, with a public relations campaign and a foundation that has benefited from its contacts through the World Economic Forum. That's more of that is detailed in the report that you mentioned, Amy, at the top, which is, may I mention, available on our website, www.tradewatch.org. It's an excellent report that we just put out. And we talk about Klaus Schwab and his the way he's profited through a lot of basic insider dealing, profited personally and his family. His lovely wife, Hildy, and he run a foundation that's doing a lot of business, plus some corporate. And obviously, this whole interlocking directorship of the corporate elites doesn't surprise anyone.
In a moment, we're going to go to Van Jones, who is in a few minutes, as we do this broadcast,
great,
for those who are running us live, getting an award from the World Economic Forum.
Right.
So we'll hear what he has to say and the goodies he got from the WEF.
I'd like that.
But I wanted to ask you about this issue of the different groups that the WEF is courting, the World Economic Forum,
sure,
to give it a different look.
Sure, a different look, a patina of respectability and legitimacy. And I look, and as you probably know, President Sweeney of the AFL-CIO has gone in with 14 international labor presidents. Van Jones is on the inside. I'm looking forward to hearing his report. Ever since Seattle 99, Amy, the World Economic Forum has been engaged in a very aggressive and very sophisticated public relations campaign to give it the this patina of respectability, a veneer of legitimacy that it somehow is a global organization. And I'm not knocking anybody who's gone on the inside, but I will tell you that immediately after Seattle, certain NGOs, many of us who were in Seattle, were invited to join them in Davos last year. And while they were there, they gave a very pointed critique. I was down in Porto Alegre. It was, you know, at the original World Social Forum. Laurie Wallach, my boss, was over in Davos. And she was not invited back, and several others were not invited back for the simple reason that they made the very pointed critique about how this backroom corporate hobnobbing was essentially creating the architecture for the global economy without any transparency, accountability, or democracy whatsoever. And they're not invited back. So I have to say, I'm glad that they're talking to Van and the international vice presidents and presidents that are in there, the labor and Mr. Sweeney himself. But it's really part of that sophisticated public relations campaign that I mentioned before.
On that same theme, they not only did they critique the fact that just 2% of NGOs were invited to give this greenwash, but I believe it was Friends of the Earth which critiqued specific policies, the sustainability index, the idea that that many of the policies were actually pushing global warming and the growth of carbon dioxide.
That's exactly right. You see, the thing is, some of the NGOs out there that follow these issues want a seat at the table, and some others are satisfied merely with a seat near the table. And my organization has always demanded the maximum in accountability in a democracy. And I think that that's... I think that's the responsible position, and the responsible position for me is to go out and protest the World Economic Forum when I leave the studio.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mike Dolan, for being here. Deputy Director of Public Citizen, the report is called Davos World Economic Forum. Pricey Corporate Trade Association loses its camouflage. You are listening to Democracy Now!'s special. It's called Is Another World Possible? Stay with us.
Preferable.
And indeed it is possible.
We're living in a mean time and an aggressive time, a painful time, a time where cynicism rots the vine, and a time where violence blocks the sunshine. Lifetimes go by in a flash, in a search for love, in a search for cash. Everybody wanna be some fat tycoon. Everybody wanna be on a tropic honeymoon. Nobody wanna sing a little bit out of tune, or be the backbone of a rebel platoon. It's too soon to step out of line. You might get laughed at, you might get fined, but do you fear me when I say I feel pain every day when I see the way my friends gotta slay and never get ahead of bills they gotta pay? No way, no way. Some make a living doing killing, Colombian penicillin. Some are willing to play the villain. Time, pass the information, or pass the wine, pass the buck, or pass the baton, but you can't pass the police or the Pentagon, the IRS or the upper echelon. I think it's time to make a move on the contradiction. Rock the nation, television and radio station.
You are listening to Democracy Now! Is Another World Possible? I'm Amy Goodman here with Aniruddha Das, and we're bringing you a two-hour special as thousands are protesting in the streets of New York. The World Economic Forum, founded in Davos around 30 years ago, came to New York, Ani, ostensibly to celebrate New York, to show solidarity with New York in the post-September 11th world. But we understand something rather different, the troubles they were having in Switzerland with the protesters.
Yes, in two years ago, there were major protests at Davos. Something like 2,000 protesters showed up. Amnesty International was very critical of the way in which these protesters were treated. There was a lockdown by the Swiss police. Last year, there was a complete lockdown by the Swiss police.
Last year, Vandana Shiva was beaten up by police, the well-known Indian anti-corporate globalization activist.
And because this lockdown really affected the people, including church groups in Switzerland who were leading peace organizations. All of these groups were locked down, locked out.
So they had to get out of there. They came to New York, and while they're talking about being good for business, in fact, actually, ironically, in the area around the Waldorf Astoria where this summit is taking place, businesses are ailing. They have lost thousands of dollars in the last days because of the police crackdown. Well, right now we're going to turn to Van Jones, who was in our studio yesterday. And after he was leaving, he said, oh, I wanted to show you some goodies that I got. Van Jones works with the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in San Francisco, a well-known anti-police brutality activist and lawyer. You're listening to Democracy Now! Breaking the Sound Barrier. I'm here with Van Jones, who's the founder of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, looking a little different than I've seen him in the past, in the Bay Area, a human rights activist. He is not a salesman for Compaq, but he is a recipient of a World Economic Forum award. And among the things that he gets for being a participant at the Waldorf Astoria in this event is a Compaq Palm Pilot, but it's a lot more than any Palm Pilot I've seen. What do you get for the, $25,000 membership fee for this event?
Well, luckily they waived my $25,000, so I got a chance to participate for free because of this global leadership, global leaders of tomorrow thing. But everybody who signs up gets handed one of these things as soon as you walk in. You have to go through a long line to get them. But this is how people are coordinating themselves inside the Waldorf Astoria.
I just want to say, for listeners who cannot see your Compaq Palm Pilot,
it starts with a picture of you, and it says Van Jones. You didn't put that in?
No, I didn't put that in there at all. It knows who I am, and it knows when I'm in the building, it knows where I am. And then you have to put in your little special code. You kind of type that in, and then once you type it in, you have access to all this incredible information. Every single participant is listed. So if you're interested, you just sort of tap on participants and organizations.
Let's say you wanted to find Quincy Jones is at this event.
Right. Sure. Well,
so you go to participants.
Yes. You click on there with your stylus, and then it searches it and finds it. And then once it comes up, you can find out all sorts of information about Quincy right here in the little thing. It's going a little slow right now.
And then you can also email him.
Yeah. Everybody's walking around with these compacts in their hands, and you can send emails to each other. So if you wanted to, you look up, you know, Bill Gates, Quincy Jones, you know, Desmond Tutu. You type out a little email to him, hit send, it goes right to him, and wherever they are in the building, they get a little beep, and they can look at it. They want to email you back. That's the way that it works. And so this is just one of the little perks. You also have this little high-tech name badge that has this little chip in it. So whenever you're trying to get, you know, past security, they have these white pieces of glowing plastic that you just sort of lean over and push your badge against, and then it beeps. It knows who you are, lets you pass. They even give you these free cashmere sweaters with not sweaters, but scarves with Davos written on them. And there's all kinds of just perks and goodies.
It says Davos.
Yeah. Davos, a global village. Isn't that sweet? Davos, a global village for 3,000 people.
I bet some of those protesters who are outside in the streets could use one of these cashmere scarves.
Well, I think that they should go up to the Waldorf and ask if they have any extra ones and see how the police respond.
Now, there's one problem, because without this ID that you have that has a computer chip in it, we can't get anywhere near the Waldorf.
You can't get anywhere near it. And I'll tell you what, I feel like a white person. Wearing this badge, because wherever I go, the police are nice to me. They're happy to see me. You know what I mean? I can go into hotels. Nobody gives me a hard time. If this thing ever falls off, I'll probably be shot on sight. So I'm just praying that this will not happen to me and that I will actually be able to survive being behind those barricades.
Very quickly, Van Jones, you're giving a speech when you get your award. For listeners who didn't hear you on a previous Democracy Now!, when you get this award at the World Economic Forum, it's right about the time major protests will be taking place outside. What will you be saying?
Well, I'll be pointing out that the fact of the award is not something I'm accepting in my own name. I'm accepting it in the name of the people who are locked out, not just the protesters who are locked out and the thousands, but really the 6 billion people who are locked out. These 3,000 economic royalists, the sort of corporate cabal, has more decision-making power than the 6 billion people that they have locked out. That represents a crisis in global democracy. And so I'm willing to accept the award in the name of those who are locked out. And I'm also going to be pointing out at that point, if there is police violence on the outside, I'm going to use it as an opportunity to speak out against that and to call upon conference participants to walk out in denunciation of the violence, and we'll see what happens. But as far as I'm concerned, accepting this award is an opportunity to go on CNN, to go on MSNBC, and tell the truth about what this is about. This is about a tiny cabal of 3,000 people hoarding power at the top and leaving out 6 billion people who have more wisdom and more expertise about the world's real problems than any CEO sipping martinis.
Van Jones, he is the head of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. And as we broadcast right now, he is giving a major speech at the World Economic Forum, accepting an award. And in our next hour, we hope we might be able to touch base with him inside the World Economic Forum at the Waldorf Astoria. You are listening to Is Another World Possible? A Democracy Now! Special. I'm Amy Goodman here with Anuruddha Das. As protesters march through the streets of Midtown Manhattan this afternoon, one of the sites they'll be passing is the New York Marriott Eastside Hotel. It's home this weekend to hundreds of participants of the World Economic Forum, presidents, foreign ministers, CEOs, whose $6,000 ticket to the WEF entitles them to 5 nights as a Marriott guest. The Marriott Eastside is, according to its brochure, a Midtown landmark gloriously restored. Its rooms cost more than $200 a night, provide guests with a full complement of amenities and hallmark Marriott service. They are, the Marriott boasts, a calm oasis in the constant commotion that is New York. But for many Marriott workers, the international hotel chain is anything but a calm oasis. It's a large employer whose long history of labor abuses has come to a new head in New York in the wake of the September 11th attacks.
Until the day that those two planes hit the World Trade Center, the Marriott had a prominent and well-situated hotel in the tower's shadow. It did a hopping business, mostly in corporate travelers, and employed hundreds of workers, many of them immigrants. But when the towers fell, debris came crashing down on the Marriott, and it was largely obliterated. Several guests and two workers died. In the days immediately following the September 11th tragedy, the Marriott announced publicly that it would find jobs for its displaced workers in other Marriott facilities. Less than a month later, however, it laid off all of them. Now, a coalition of these workers has come together to demand that Marriott give them their jobs back.
We're joined right now by an organizer as well as one of the workers. Owen Lopez is a former Marriott World Trade Center worker. Kara Newton is with the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops. Owen Lopez, let's begin with you. Where were you on September 11th?
I was at work that day.
You were at work. Yes. And what happened?
Well, it was just a regular day being at work for me, and I was on the 18th floor of the Marriott when the first plane hit, and I actually thought it was an earthquake because it just shook the whole building. And being that I know that the towers is overhead, I decided to just run out the building instead of finding out what's really going on. So I grabbed a couple of my coworkers and a couple of the guests who was running and just lead them down the stairs and ran out the building. When I got out, I saw when the second plane hit.
What happened afterwards in terms of those who died and those who survived and where you work now?
Well, my boss died, my personal boss that I report to, he died helping the guests and firefighters to evacuate the building, and another one of my coworker died. After 9/11, we was pretty much promised by Marriott that we would be placed into other Marriott facilities and you know, other stuff. And ever since 9/11, they opened new hotels, and they haven't reached out to any of us about those new property. They have another one that is due to open in Central Park South, and they told us that we had first preference and priority to those job. But still, we have to go and fill out applications and resume to compete with other people to get those jobs, even though they say we have priority.
Kara Newton, you're with the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops. Can you talk about how what has happened to the Marriott workers who survived the World Trade Center fits into what we're seeing this weekend, the protests and the planning by the world's economic leaders at the World Economic Forum?
Well, after September 11th, we saw worldwide how the world was outpouring of sympathy for victims of the World Trade Center and expressed their sympathy as well as their gratitude for the heroes that came forward that day. The Marriott, meanwhile, as an employer, as a huge corporation that made $10 billion last year, has 23 hotels worldwide, has abandoned its workers that did save hotel guests and loyally helped to guide the chaos that ensued when the planes hit. So today we have one of the largest lodging corporations abandoning victims of the World Trade Center, and they are providing an extreme example to many corporations, many companies that have abandoned their workers after the September 11th tragedy and have thrown workers who have worked there for more than 20 years, have spent their lives working at that hotel with nothing and thrown them out like garbage. And I think that I know that working people, especially in the United States, have really been ignored the kinds of conditions, the worsening conditions that are increasing among working people. And the Marriott is an example of a large corporation that, even in the wake of this tragedy, is trying to shirk responsibility and get out of supporting and helping their workers even after September 11th.
Yes, and that really fits in with what so many other companies had done in the wake of September 11th, all these airlines companies which went to Congress for massive handouts while at the same time laying off thousands of workers. So talk about the irony of the fact that delegates at the World Economic Forum are staying at the Marriott. And now let's look at some of the wonderful things that the World Economic Forum says in its website. Let me read you things that are prominently displayed right at the top of their website. It says, the annual meeting themes are sharing values and respecting differences, reducing poverty and improving equity, reevaluating leadership and governance.
Well, I think that the very fact that the delegates are staying at the Marriott Eastside really shows that their dedication to the list that you just read. And the fact that Marriott, as an employer, as a corporation, severely affected by the 9/11 tragedy, can continue its abandonment of its workers. It really shows how the Marriott as a company ignores.
Where does the struggle for rehabilitating these workers, where does it now stand?
Right now, we want to expose what the Marriott is doing, expose the other side of the September 11th tragedy, and let everyone know how the Marriott has abandoned loyal workers, launching an international boycott of the Marriott, to let everyone know that after the outpouring of sympathy, that the Marriott has left people behind.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Our guest, Kara Newton, member and organizer, National Mobilization Against Sweatshops, Owen Lopez, former Marriott World Trade Center worker and member of NMAS. And hopefully you will have a job soon. It's good to see you in our Firehouse studio. When we come back from our break, we are going to go again to the streets of New York, and we're going to go down to Porto Alegre, Brazil, to talk about the alternative forum as people try to create another world. Stay with us.
That is not what I do. I ain't no damsel in distress, and I don't need to be rescued. So put me down, punk. Wouldn't you prefer a maid in fear? Isn't there a kitten stuck up a tree somewhere? But it seems like I've got everyone fooled. Every time I say something they find hard to hear, they chalk it up to my anger and never to their own fear. Imagine you're a girl just trying to finally complain, knowing full well they prefer you were dirty and smile.
Not a Pretty Girl, Ani DeFranco here on Democracy Now! Special. Is another world possible? And a lot of people in the streets of New York are saying yes, as well as the streets of Porto Alegre will be going in just a minute. I'm here, Amy Goodman, with Aniruddha Das. We are hosting this two-hour special, Democracy Now! Is Another World Possible?
Let us go to the streets now with John Hamilton, where the action is really just beginning, just getting underway with the people who are determined to make sure that another world is possible. John Hamilton?
John, are you there? John, can you hear us?
We should stand
by. John? Yes, this is John Hamilton, halfway through Central Park. There's an enormous march. It seems to have grown in numbers, and it now looks like... Excuse me?
Describe the march. Describe the numbers. How large is it?
John, John, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, Amy. I'm sorry.
We understand that you have a guest with you. Why don't you put her on the line? One of the people who are protesting here at the World Economic Forum as the protests get underway on this day of the World Economic Forum meeting at the Waldorf. Hi, can you identify yourself? What's your name?
Hi, this is Lee.
And Lee, what group are you with?
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. What group are you with?
I'm sorry?
What group are you with, Lee? Could you talk about the group that you're representing?
Okay, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
We can hear you fine.
Okay.
Can you tell us why you're out today protesting?
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, but I'll tell you.
Well, we're going to come back to Lee. Instead, we will go down to Porto Alegre right now, where tens of thousands of people have gathered for an alternative summit. It's called the World Social Forum. Democracy Now! Producer Chris Abrams is on the line with us in Porto Alegre. Welcome, Chris.
Chris, good to be with you.
It's good to be with you. Can you describe these last few days of the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre?
It's a little hard to understand you, but I'm just going to have faith that you can hear me. I'll start off by saying it's incredible just the number of people who are here for this forum. At least 50,000 have checked into the hotels here, and that's not including the 10,000-plus youth people at the youth camp who are setting up tents. So it's an incredible number of people. I think the city of Porto Alegre and also the organizers are a little overwhelmed by it. You can't even move when you're trying to get into some of the forums. Last night, for example, Noam Chomsky was greeted by such a huge number of people that they had to move him into another room when everyone was expecting him to speak in a room that was packed with maybe 3,000 people. He all of a sudden appeared on a video screen to everyone's dismay. You couldn't hear him for the first 5 minutes of the talk because people were chanting and outraged that they didn't get to see him in person. There's 4 or 5 days now of conferences, seminars, and workshops. It's impossible to choose which to go to. I'll just give you a quick example. February 1st. What's that? I can't really
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. This is Anirudha co-hosting with Amy Goodman on this program, Is Another World Possible? Go ahead, describe the scene in Porto Alegre. Describe the forums that you have been attending.
It's very hard to describe who has been attending.
No, give a sense of the forums, give a sense of the energy that there is, give a sense of the new ideas that you're getting.
Right. The energy is unlike anything. I mean, if we were to compare this forum, for example, with the conference in Durban, there is no comparison. Everyone here is excited to be here. Spontaneous protests erupt every few hours inside the conference site. Early this morning, for example, there was a Palestinian demonstration, free, free Palestine, free, free Palestine, and other chants saying Bush and Sharon are terrorists. There was a women's march today, also people demanding the right to abortion, to freedom of choice, and denouncing President Bush for cutting off funding to the Global South for abortion and reproductive rights. And then the forums, the conferences. There are at least 7 major conferences every day happening. Yesterday there was a conference on international trade with Martin Kaur, Lori Wallach, 5 other people or so. There was another conference at the same time on transnational corporations, a 3rd one on financial capital's control, a 4th on external debt. And those are just the conferences. Then there are workshops that grassroots organizations have planned and are putting on themselves.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you for being with us, and we're going to go back to Porto Alegre in our next hour and stay now with the Porto Alegre conference a few days ago. And I should say a couple things here. We're engaged in the largest public media collaboration in this country. We're broadcasting on community radio stations around the country, on Pacifica radio stations, as well as on public access TV stations and on Dish Network Channel 9415. We are getting video
from Porto Alegre via the internet that is broadcast quality, that is, we're doing some of the most cutting edge work with technology and communications in this country. And it's all because of our listeners and viewers. As Chris was speaking, for those who are watching on TV, we're showing some of the images of the streets of Porto Alegre, Brazil. And a few days ago, Chris set up with some of the guests in Porto Alegre to speak with us by video phone. We're going to turn right now to Oronto Douglas. I worked with Oronto in Nigeria several years ago. He's one of the leading human rights activists, one of the lawyers for Ken Saro-Wiwa, who was executed by the military regime for his organizing against Shell Corporation. He is in Porto Alegre, and he is talking about the different phases of globalization. This is Oronto Douglas.
First, I want to clarify that corporate globalization is not new. It's been with us. This is the third wave of corporate-led globalization. In the first wave, as I've explained to a couple of friends some time ago, it was the globalization of human resources, which was essentially manifest in the forceful acquisition, eviction, and transportation of the African people, essentially from the Niger Delta, into the Americas to work in the plantation. It is those generation of our people that were transported there that are now known as the African Americans. That first wave then led to the second wave of corporate-led globalization, which was essentially manifest in colonization. During this phase, imperialism, as championed by Britain in my own case, that is in the case of the Niger Delta, Nigeria, and in that west coast of Africa, colonization became very effective. And of course, the driving force was natural resources, the taking away of palm oil at that time, and then which the fast industrializing communities of Western Europe needed. This third wave of corporate globalization is manifest in new resources, this time crude oil and gas. And of course, these materials, as in the previous globalization, are traded globally. And for us in the Delta, our people, our environment, have been on the receiving end of these injustices, the pollution of our waters, the desecration of our shrines, the destruction of our human dignity, and the taking away of our resources that led to poverty, disease, war, conflict, and all sorts of anger and injustices on the streets and in the creeks of the Delta. Our determination is to stop this, and we are committed to doing so.
And that was Oronto Douglas, a Nigerian human rights activist and environmentalist with the group Environmental Rights Action in Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, where just in the last days a munitions dump has exploded, killing, it is believed, thousands of people. In a conversation I had with Oronto, he said part of these are the casualties of militarization.
And the casualties of environmental degradation and the destruction of people's lives. And the amazing thing is that much of this destruction is actually funded by taxpayers, like U.S. taxpayers, through export credit agencies, through the banks, through this entire structure of international economy, which we will talk about in much more detail very shortly.
That's right, Anuruddha. In our second hour, we're going to talk extensively about that. We'll be joined by someone from the Environmental Defense Fund. But right now, we're going to go to activities that happened last night in New York at Washington Square Park. John Hamilton was there. He is a reporter with WORT in Madison, Wisconsin, as well as Madison Public Access TV. But he was on the streets and talking to people.
Economic Forum, in my opinion, is completely undemocratic. It's where a lot of the decisions that later get cemented in the international financial institutions first start being discussed. And I think that until we have true democracy, until we start bringing decisions of global economic justice, which affect each and every one of us, to the people, we're lagging far behind.
A lot of us have come together to form this group called Another World is Possible, and we just believe that we can't let our anger and sadness overcome us in these times, and that we should be looking, and the thing that connects us to the people in Afghanistan, the people who have experienced the pain of U.S. bombs in the past, the thing that connects us is our grief and healing instead of anger and resentment. and that if we just continue this cycle of hatred, it's just gonna, we're never gonna feel safe again.
Many reasons that I came out here. One is destruction of the environment by the corporations. The other is this destruction of labor rights. The poverty around the world that I consider the direct result of corporate greed, the direct result of capital that's run amok in this system.
I fear that they may be discussing things like the free trade area of the Americas, which would basically expand NAFTA to all 34 countries in the hemisphere and wreak havoc on working people and the environment. I fear that they're talking about the expansion of the GATS, the General Agreement on Trades and Services, and I fear they're going to expand the neoliberal agenda to get into even more aspects of our day-to-day life.
Hundreds of people last night at a peace vigil in Washington Square Park. Again, John Hamilton doing the interviews for that as we head up the West Side. You can't do it on the highway, by the way. The West Side Highway is closed down by the World Trade Center, still ground zero. We are just blocks from there. But heading up to around 57th Street, there is a large convergence space where people are making puppets. I spent some time the other night there talking to people. Mark Reed, who's with the Independent Media Center, prepared this piece, which it shows the organizing that is going on there as the World Economic Forum participants prepare for their soiree at the New York Stock Exchange tonight. But this is the convergence space, the space where they're making puppets on the West Side.
A challenge to us to constantly innovate and come up with new forms of struggling, new ways that we can actually communicate with other people in our community to express our emotions, our ideas, our excitement for how the world can be if we change things.
People are disarmed by a spectacle as opposed to just a bunch of rabble-rousers screaming, you know, obscenities at upstanding citizens like WEF participants. It's a carnival.
What are you practicing for?
We're doing the tangoing at the for the WEF action in February 2nd.
We thought of the tango because it's an Argentinian dance because of everything that's going on these days in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of doing it in solidarity with them. They're going to be holding big hats, top hats, and cocktail glasses, and being kind of the capitalist cocktail party block. Because basically the people in the WEF are having a cocktail party at our expense. They're getting together to talk about how to make more money and plunder the world.
Like a thousand rich guys, they're getting together to have a few cocktails and stuff like that, and they just talk about economies.
All the other people are going to be dressed really colorfully as carnivalescos, you know, all dressed up, and, you know, the people.
I'm going to be dancing. I don't know about everybody else.
Rehearsing for the WEF protests that are coming up on next Saturday, and we're going to be the Radical Rockettes. We're going to lead the march with a classic New York kick line. We're going to have these really wonderful headpieces that are like the Statue of Liberty, and we're probably going to put glitter on them just so they're nice and shiny.
Statue of Liberty crowns for the whole protest, which we're going to give out on Saturday. And we'll have a sea of liberties, and I think we're also going to have a Lady Liberty kick line.
We're going to be kind of dressed like the Statues of Liberty.
Yeah.
Kind of. Well, the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of New York being a city that really welcomes like the poor, the hungry, and the downtrodden, and that's no longer the case. In one sense, it's a symbol that's being held hostage by corporate interests at this point.
And after this set, let's go traveling.
you know, because we believe in liberty and justice for all. And we're wondering what it is about all that these other folks don't understand.
Every culture, if you look around the world, has their carnival, their parades, their ways of like doing large-scale public theater, and it's started to become a central part of mass actions in the global justice movement.
There's a big central Lady Liberty puppet that breaks apart and comes back together again several times throughout the day.
And of course, over here we see horns. So we're thinking some kind of corporate official, you know, maybe Enron executive. Maybe, hey, we don't know yet.
Most of the giant puppets are representative of communities that are have been wounded by the WEF.
It's all Cheney's fault.
We're going to have literally hundreds of different images, many of them big puppets, many of them small images.
They're tools to build a better world.
So where are these going to be used?
Well, the shovel is to, you know, plant the seeds of change, and we're going to have torches, and that's kind of the light of truth, and we have hammers to build housing for everybody.
The sounds and scenes of the Convergence Space, a big space where the activists have been coming to New York in preparation for the protests, puppetry and artistry, a key part of what they call the Carnival of Resistance as the World Economic Forum takes place at the Waldorf Astoria. We're going to continue for our second hour, but right now say goodbye to those who have to leave. Democracy Now! Produced by Miranda Kennedy, Chris Abrams with help from Lizzie Ratner and Deepa Fernandez. I'm Amy Goodman with Aniruddha Das. Stay with us for this two-hour special, Is Another World Possible?
Back when Eisenhower was the president,